with Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Billy the Brain, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400 or streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people have to say and see how it figures into whether we live and work here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right, with the emphasis on the right. Every show has a theme, and today's theme starting off the week is managing your presence, both online and off. Both of my guests specialize in managing their presence. If you're listening to this show at work, my first guest wrote the book connecting managing your presence at work and maintaining your mojo both at work and home. Marshall Goldsmith is an author of management-related literature, professor, consultant, and executive coach. He received his Bachelor of Science from Rose Holman Institute of Technology, his MBA from Indiana University, go Hoosiers, and his PhD from UCLA, just down the road from us. From 1976 to 2000, he was an assistant professor and then associate dean at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. He's currently a professor at Alliant International University. He teaches executive education at Dartmouth's Tuck School of Business. Very impressive. And he frequently speaks at leading business schools as well. Goldsmith is a pioneer in the use of 360-degree feedback. He is also one of the very few consultants who's been asked to work with more than 80 major CEOs and their management teams as well. In 2004, he was recognized by the American Management Association as one of the 50 great thinkers and business leaders who have impacted the field of management over the last 80 years. Very, very compelling. He's written more than 24 books. Welcome to the show, Marshall. How are you today?
Very happy to be here.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you on board. Thanks so much for being here. And we're talking today about managing your presence and both online and off, and your book, Mojo, fits right in with that. So let me just start right at the beginning. The same beliefs that we have that lead us to be successful can make it very difficult for us to change our behavior. And then it's difficult not only to change our behavior, but it's even more difficult to change other people's perceptions of our behavior. True or false?
Very true. Very true. My personal coaching clients are CEOs or could be CEOs of multi-billion-dollar companies. And one of the beliefs that tend to lead to success, obviously, is the drive to win. The downside occurs when you become a big executive and you can try to win too much. And then instead of being an executive whose goal is to help other people become winners, we can still focus too much on winning ourselves. So that same belief that led to success can cause the problems. For example, you want to go to dinner at restaurant X. Your husband, wife, friend, or partner wants to go to dinner at restaurant Y. Have a heated argument. You go to restaurant Y. It was not your choice. The food tastes awful and the service is terrible. Option A, critique the food. Point out our partner was wrong. This mistake could have been avoided if they listened to me. Option B, shut up. Eat the food, enjoy it, and have a nice evening. What would I do? What should I do? 75% of my successful clients, what would I do? Critique the food. What should I do? Shut up.
There you go. So the things that lead us to be successful may, in fact, hinder us once we get there. I love it. Now, your new book is called Mojo. In fact, the title is Mojo, How to Get It, How to Keep It, How to Get It Back If You Lose It. So let's talk about what do you mean by Mojo and what are the building blocks of Mojo?
Well, what I mean by mojo, that positive spirit toward what you are doing now, it starts from the inside and radiates to the outside. And it is totally connected with what you're talking about today, the various elements of mojo. One is our identity. How do we define ourselves? Who are we? Another one is our achievement. What do we accomplish? What do we do? Another one is our reputation, which is a key element of what you're talking about today. And then the fourth factor is acceptance, our ability to accept what is and change what we can change and accept what we can't.
All right. Now, that's interesting. But when you say that, does that apply to all people, or do you find that men and women are different when it comes to mojo?
Well, in terms of leadership, I can answer this not from a theory point of view, but from a research point of view. I was just back at the Center for Creative Leadership. They've done a huge study on women and men in leadership. The average woman in 360-degree feedback is seen to be a better leader than the average man.
Is that right?
Oh, this doesn't mean every woman is better than every man. It does mean, you know, Center for Creative Leadership, 3,000 people in the database, a global sample, the average woman is seen as a better leader than the average man. The average woman has one issue to deal with consistently and amazingly more than the average man, which I address in my book. That's the desire to be the perfect everything to everyone. Women tend to carry around one thing more than men, guilt. The one coaching I have that's different, not 100% of the time, of course, but often between women and men, with women I'm statistically much more likely to say the following words: please quit being so hard on yourself. Please quit being so hard on yourself.
Isn't that interesting? Now, what is it about women that makes them a better leader, using this 360-degree
feedback?
Well,
the answer to that question is, I don't know. I have a degree in math, so I don't like to talk about things as facts that I really don't know the answers.
Okay.
The fact, those other two issues, one, that women are perceived as more effective leaders, that's a fact. And two, that women statistically have more guilt, that's a fact. Why, we could argue for a variety of reasons, and you know, your guess is probably as good as mine, probably a lot of reasons why, but I don't have research to validate the why.
All right, fair enough. Tell me, how do your achievements that you've had in the past impact your mojo?
Well, if you look at achievement from a mojo perspective, we have, we call the mojo scorecard.
Okay.
And I look at achievement from a different perspective. Half of the mojo scorecard is more traditional. You look at, what do you contribute to this activity? Are you motivated? Are you able? Do you know what to do and how to do it? Are you confident? Are you authentic? The other half of the mojo scorecard, though, is different, and that's what I like about the book. What is the activity given to you? Does it make you happy? Is it meaningful for you? Do you find it fulfilling? Are you grateful for the opportunity to do it? Are the rewards you get from it important to you? Are you, you know, is, if you look at it, not just what am I giving to it, but what is it giving to me? And sometimes we get lost in achievement, looking at what am I giving to this activity, that we don't stop and reflect on life and ask a question, what's this activity giving back to me?
Wow. Good advice. We're talking to Marshall Goldsmith, everybody, author of the book Mojo, How to Get It, How to Keep It, and How to Get It Back If You Lose It. Now, a lot of us, Marshall, are absolutely clueless about how our reputations impact our mojo. Explain on that a little bit more, if you would, please.
Well, you know, I give people confidential feedback on how they're perceived. And my clients, again, are typically big executives in big companies. And if you've never received confidential feedback before, you're often incredibly surprised. Sometimes the way the rest of the world sees us is only peripherally connected to the way we see ourselves. For example, you may think yourself as, one person I worked with saw himself as just caring so much about the people he worked with because he worked so hard to help them be successful. But his day-to-day behavior was pushy and rude, and they saw him as arrogant and disrespectful.
Wow.
We get the feedback, he was totally shocked. And I think it's very important to look at this concept of reputation. And by the way, for your listeners, if you have children, mm-hmm. managing your presence online and offline, online, critically important. I am shocked at what a lot of young people do now in terms of what they put on Facebook and all these things. They don't realize this can come back and kill you, and it can ruin your career. And it doesn't get offline. Let me give you one example.
Please do.
A woman called me up from Accenture, a very large, important consulting firm. She was 26 years old. I'm talking to her on the phone. I'd never met her before. And I did a Google search before I started talking to her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just said, did you go to Columbia? Oh, yes, I did. Did you get an MBA? Yes. Do you like to run in marathons? Oh, yeah. Well, how do you know so much? I said, did you ever go to Jamaica, do a lot of dope, and have some great sex? The woman goes,
oops.
Oh, my God, were you there? I said, no, I missed that one. But I wasn't there, but I just read about it. This is terrible. And she had no idea that stuff was online.
Well, hadn't she put it there herself?
She sent a note in what she thought was a confidential, note to a travel site, which got picked up by somebody else, was put online.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm. And by the way, I see this happen too much with young people today. They really don't think about it. And I think a lot of times they almost go out of their way to try to look, you know, risque and crazy, not thinking about, hey, I'm going to be applying for a job next year. And these potential employers are going to be reading this stuff about me. And what is the message it's going to send? So I think your program today is critically important.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. We're talking to Marshall Goldsmith, everybody. We're talking, today's theme is managing your presence both online and offline, and I couldn't agree with you more. Let's just pick up on that idea and take it one step farther. For people who are just starting out in their careers, maybe they're at their first job, they're listening to the sound of our voices at their office on the computer. Managing your online presence is so important. How, nowadays, with all of the technology tools, how are big companies using this information that they find online to screen applicants and to make hiring decisions?
Using it the same way I would use it. It's not immoral, illegal, or unethical. All you have to do is do a search. Would you do a search if you were going to hire somebody? Of course you would.
Absolutely.
You do a Google search. And what do? You go to do a Google search. You get everything that's ever you can find out about this person online, and you look it up. It's not that hard to do. And so, you know, what they're doing is not immoral, illegal, or unethical. And I don't blame the companies. The problem is the people that put this stuff online about themselves.
And they are the ones who put it on there. That's the amazing thing. We're talking to Marshall Goldsmith, everybody, author of the book Mojo. I just want to tease the audience. We're going to have to take a short break here, Marshall. But when we come back, I want to play this game with you. You have something in your book that's called the Smart Pill Paradox. Mm-hmm. And I want to play that game with you. I'll give you my interpretation. You give me your interpretation. We'll compare. We'll contrast. So stay tuned. Come back and listen to us after this short break, and we will play the Smart Pill Paradox.
And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
This is Billy the Brain, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Check us out online at our new website, which is brainstormingonline.com. Our theme today is managing your presence both online and off, and my very special guest is Marshall Goldsmith. He was voted or recognized by the American Management Association as one of the 50 greatest thinkers and business leaders who have impacted the world of management over the last 80 years. Very incredible credentials. He's written a book called Mojo, How to Get It, How to Keep It, How to Get It Back If You Lose It. And before we went to break, Marshall, I teased the audience that we were going to do the Smart Pill Paradox. So would you set that up for us? What is the Smart Pill Paradox? And then I will tell you how I would answer that, and if you would give me some feedback, please.
Well, if you're given the opportunity to take a pill, after you take this pill, you will be, for the rest of your life, 10% smarter. Your IQ goes up 10%. You can pick things up 10% faster. You're 10% smarter. But the world is going to see you as 20% dumber. Do you take the pill?
And I find this was a great question because it really makes you look at your self-perception versus what others look at you. And my answer to that was, after giving it some considerable thought, I would not take the pill. The 10% increase in my intelligence, my ability to grasp things, to me, was not as important as the 20% decrease in how others perceive me.
I have the same reaction as you, although I work with a lot of people, and about a third of the people do take the pill.
A third?
They
wow.
Say, you know, I don't care that much. I really think I'd be more clever and I'd be smarter, and that's all that matters to me anyway. So, you know, there's not a right or wrong answer, by the way. Some people are just focused more on themselves and their own individual achievement, and that's fine. And then other people are more focused on reputation. My job, I have to help other people achieve positive long-term change in behavior. And if I'm seen as 20% dumber, I'm not going to be better at what I do. I'm going to be worse at what I do.
And that makes perfect sense. I mean, you're talking to Billy the Brain. Who would want to take a pill where I'm perceived as being dumber? It just goes without saying. But that leads us to the bigger question, and that is our whole identity of ourselves. And in the book, you break it out that there are actually four types of identity. You call them the programmed identity, the created identity, the reflected and remembered identities. Would you break those down for us? What do you mean by each of those?
Well, first, if you look at a matrix, and on one dimension, we have future and past. On the second dimension, we have self and other. We can look at four different elements of our identity. The first one is called our remembered identity. How do you know you're a bad tennis player? Well, you remember times when you lost, and these memories lead to an identity saying, I am a bad tennis player. The second part of our identity is called our reflected identity. That's feedback. That's what other people tell us about ourselves. How do you know you're a bad listener? Well, somebody told you you're a bad listener, and you kind of bought into that and believed it. Our next element of our identity is our programmed identity. These are the messages that other important people tell us about ourselves. For example, I was brought up in a small town in Kentucky. My mother went to college for 2 years, and she wanted me to go to school. My dad had a two-pump gas station. She didn't want me to do that. When I was growing up, what message did I get about myself as a child? You're smart. In fact, you're extremely smart. You will go to college. You can probably go to graduate school. And you have no mechanical skills, and you never have any mechanical skills the rest of your life. Well, I basically talk in the book about how I lived that out until I was 27 years old. And I finally realized why I had no mechanical skills. I was told I had no skills. I bought into it. I believed it. There was no logic behind that. Well, as obvious as that sounds, I see this with the executives I coach all the time. They say things like, I can't listen. I look in their ears. Why not? You got something stuck in there? Why can't you listen? Or, I'm no good at recognition. Well, why not? Well, there's no logical reason you can't listen or you're no good at recognition. You just bought into this, and, you know, it becomes a self-limiting program. And then the fourth element, the mojo element, is our created identity. And I talk about having dinner with the famous rock star Bono. A very interesting experience. He talked about his identity and how he started out as a regular guy, still is. Then he became a musician, still loves music. And then he became a rock and roll fan. Then he became a musician. Then he became a rock star. He talked about that, what that was like. And now he's a humanitarian. He talked about being a humanitarian. And here's a guy that created an entire new identity for himself. And by the way, without being a hypocrite or a phony. So my point in the book is we don't have to get locked into who we have been. And we can change our identity without being a hypocrite or without being a phony. We don't have to be that same person we've been year after year after year in the past.
All right. Got it. Now, your book is called Mojo, How to Get It, How to Keep It. And my big question to you, if mojo is the state that we want to be in, what's the opposite of mojo?
Nojo.
Nojo?
And nojo, it's something you can see on the airplane. On American Airlines alone, I have over 10 million frequent flyer miles. I don't know if you saw that movie featuring George Clooney up in the air, but I have the card this guy was striving for. Well, nojo, you see it on the airplane. One flight attendant is positive, motivated, upbeat, enthusiastic. Role model for mojo. One is negative, bitter, angry, and cynical. Role model for nojo. They're in the same plane, same company, same time.
And it's just all how they perceive the situation that they're in.
It's not what's coming from the outside.
That's right.
It's coming from the inside.
All right, well, let me shotgun some phrases at you that I hear every day at the workplace. And tell me how and why these phrases impact my mojo, if you would, please. The first one is just, let me keep talking.
Well, yeah, let me keep talking. That's typically what occurs when you're trying to win an argument and it's over, but you just keep swinging after the bell. First thing I teach you in selling is when you get a yes or you get a no and it's clear, shut up. You know, don't keep arguing. And one of the great learning points that I got from Peter Drucker years ago, every decision is made by the person who has the power to make the decision. Make peace with that. Not the best person or the right person or the smart person. It's made by that person. Once we make peace with this, number one, we make a bigger impact on the world, and two, we're a lot happier.
Okay. What about it's not fair? I hear this all the time.
Well, it's not fair. And again, it's not fair goes back into some ridiculous assumption that somehow life is supposed to be logical or fair. It's never been fair. It's never going to get to be fair. And it's not fair now. Make peace with that. So what? Life isn't fair. And by the way, most people who complain that life is not fair that you and I hear are people who in the history of the world, compared to people who are blessed, have more blessings than 90% of all humans who've ever lived.
Well, I would agree with that. We're living in the best time in human history, in the best country in human history. So even if you're downtrodden here, you're better off than you were if you were in ancient Rome. That's for sure.
Exactly.
I agree with that completely. We're talking to Marshall Goldsmith, everybody, author of the book Mojo. Another phrase that I hear, and I got this a lot from my parents, I had it rougher than you.
Yeah, and it's interesting. When I was growing up, I swore I would never say that to my children. I must have said it 1,000 times. It's like we get possessed by the devil and these dumb words come out of our mouths. I mean, if you remember your parents saying that to you, you didn't care. You just shut up. You get your eyes glazed over. You know, oh, my God, I have to listen to this again. And you know what? We tend to just do this over and over to really glorify ourselves and talk about how heroic and martyr-like we are as opposed to the people we're talking to. I have a funny story. I did that to my daughter once. I said, when I was a boy, we didn't have this, and we didn't have this, and you have this, and you have that. And I'm badgering my poor daughter. She's 7 years old. You know, she looked at me and she said, Daddy, it's not my fault you made money.
I love it. Out of the mouths of babes, right?
Right.
Oh, I tell
you. It's not my fault.
That's great. And the last one that I hear a lot, and I actually find myself saying this, unfortunately, more than I would care to, and that is when I'm looking or talking to somebody and saying, why did you do that? Just yeah. kind of the how could you be so stupid sort of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, you're accusing them. Either they're malicious or ignorant. And the reality is, if they are malicious and you say, why did you say that? Well, they're not going to tell the truth anyway. And if they're not malicious, you just insulted them. So you don't win either way when you say, why did you do that? Why did you do that? And as if somehow they're either idiots or they're evil. Very few people say, I did it because I'm a complete idiot, or I did it because I'm an evil person whose mission in life is to screw things up for you.
We're talking to Marshall Goldsmith, everybody, author of the book Mojo. And we've only got a couple minutes left, Marshall, but one question that I have for you, and this has to do with the insecurity in the job markets and everything else that we're facing out there. You write that there's no way we can understand the future by nostalgically looking back at the past, that you should look at your career as if this job that I have is gone. Why should you take that approach?
There's no security today. There is zero security out there. And I think very important to face the fact there's no security. Everyone is, in essence, an entrepreneur today. And you have to sort of earn it day after day after day after day. And we could sit there and say it's not like the old days. You're right. It's not like the old days. And guess what? The old days aren't coming back. Make peace with what is. Realize that we all live in very uncertain and insecure times. Don't assume that the job you have is going to be permanent or stable. It probably isn't. And always be prepared to change.
We're talking with the author of the book, Mojo, How to Get It, How to Keep It, How to Get It Back If You Lose It. It's Marshall Goldsmith is on the line. The thing that I like, Marshall, about your book is in the back of the book you had 14 tools to begin improving your mojo right away. We don't have time to go into all 14, but for somebody who's listening at their desk right now at work, what one bit of advice would you give them?
I'll give you my favorite coaching advice in the whole world. Take a breath. Imagine you're 95 years old and you're just getting ready to die. But right before you take your last breath, you're given a wonderful gift, the ability to go back in time and talk to the person who's listening to me right now. What advice would the wise 95-year-old you have for the you that's listening to me right now?
Now that's very profound, very Zen-like too. So look back over your life, reflect over, and what would you say to yourself now? What do you find most people say?
Three themes. Theme number one could be summarized in three words, be happy now. I've asked thousands of parents around the world this question. When my child grows up, I want my child to be. One word comes up more than every other word combined, happy. You want your kids to be happy. You want your parents to be happy. You want the people who love you to be happy. You want the people who respect your work to be happy. You go first. You be happy. Number two is people. Do whatever you can to build relationships with friends and family and help people. When you're 95, you know what you realize?
What's that?
That's what counts. I've talked to a lot of CEOs who retired and asked them, what are you proud of? So far, none of them told me how big their office was. And then the final is, if you have a dream, go for it. You don't go for it when you're 25. You may not when you're 35 or 85. And it doesn't have to be a big one, maybe a little one. Go to New Zealand, play a guitar. Other people may think your dream is goofy. Who cares? Not their dream, it's yours. Not their life, it's your life.
I love it. Sound advice. Be happy, build your relationships with people, and go for your dream. Marshall, I can't believe how quickly the time has gone. We've been talking to Marshall Goldsmith, everybody, author of the book Mojo, How to Get It, How to Keep It, How to Get It Back If You Lose It. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about your teachings, your books, where should they go?
Email marshall@marshallgoldsmith.com and website. I give everything away, by the way. You can copy, share, download, duplicate all my materials. www.marshallgoldsmith, and Marshall has two L's, marshallgoldsmithlibrary.com. All one word, marshallgoldsmithlibrary.com. Almost up to 5 million times people have taken something from my website.
5 million. Oh, that is an incredible number. So that's marshallgoldsmithlibrary.com.
That's it.
Oh, that's wonderful. Marshall, thank you so much for being our guest. It has been a real privilege.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you. Bye.